Welcome to the Times of Israel's Daily Briefing. Today is Sunday, April 7th, day 184 to the war with Hamas. Amanda Borchel-Dan here with our military reporter, Emmanuel Fabian. Hi, Manny. Thanks for joining me as we mark 6 months to the war.
Hi, Amanda. Good morning.
At this six-month mark, we are going to get a guided tour of Israel's fronts and hear what is happening in each. We'll discuss lessons learned from the war and what could be looming on the horizon. All this and much, much more when we're back.
The Technion Israel Institute of Technology is where some of Israel's brightest minds ask the biggest question of all. What if? What if they could take on the world's biggest challenges? What if they could develop life-changing environmental, scientific, health, medical, and technological discoveries that will make a huge impact on Israel and the planet? But they don't just ask the question, they answer it too. They turn those ideas into reality. They make them happen. To see just some of the incredible things they've achieved, get the Technion Booklet of Wonders at ats.org/wonders. We hope it inspires you to give them your support so they can keep doing what they do best. The American Technion Society. World-changing discoveries by Israel's brightest minds, made possible by you.
On October 7th, Hamas led a cross-border attack, killing 1,200 people in southern Israel and abducting 253 to Gaza. Israel responded with a military campaign to topple the Hamas regime in the Gaza Strip, destroy the terror group, and free the hostages. The day after the Hamas assault, Lebanon-based terror group Hezbollah began attacks along Israel's northern border, and quickly other fronts became active, including Houthi strikes on shipping routes in the Red Sea. So, Manny, I'd like to start with what has been the focus of the war, the Gaza Strip. And the IDF released some overview numbers of casualties and wounded this morning and rocket fire, many after the ground offensive began in late October even. So what are the hard numbers as you're hearing them?
So since October 7th and within the past 6 months, the IDF says it has killed around 13,000 Hamas operatives and members of other terror groups in the Gaza Strip. That is in addition, I believe, to the around 1,000 terrorists killed in southern Israel on October 7th itself. According to the army's data, five Hamas brigade commanders and other commanders with sort of equivalent ranks have been killed, along with 20 Hamas battalion commanders and more than 100 Hamas company commanders, as well as others with similar ranks, according to the data. In Gaza, 32,000 targets have been struck. That includes sites belonging to Hamas and Palestinian Islamic Jihad, rocket launching positions, weapons depots, everything belonging to the terror group. 3,600 of them were actually discovered during the war. They weren't predetermined targets that the Israeli army already had. Also, since the beginning of the war, 9,100 projectiles, rockets and mortars mostly, have been fired from Gaza at Israel. Those that crossed the border, not those that fell short, which are likely hundreds more. Most of these rockets, I think around 3,000 of them, were fired within the first few hours of the onslaught on October 7th. And then there were many more attacks in the following days and weeks, although that has tapered off significantly in the past few months of the operation. Also, according to the data, the IDF's Unit 504, which is a military intelligence unit, interrogated 4,600 suspects in the Gaza Strip. I don't have an exact number on how many were arrested and brought to Israel, but many of them were. In terms of casualties, since October 7th, 604 soldiers, reservists, and local security officers have been killed, and 3,193 have been wounded. That includes during the onslaught itself, also during attacks on the northern border, as well as attacks in the West Bank and in Israel. Of that number, 260 soldiers were killed during the fighting in the Gaza Strip, and another 1,552 were wounded. Among the 260 soldiers, 41 were killed in friendly fire incidents and other military-related accidents during the ground offensive in Gaza.
What would you say until now have been the operations that the IDF is most pleased with? We've discussed, of course, the Shifa hospital operation that wrapped up last week.
I think definitely the Shifa operation is regarded to be one of the most successful operations in the war so far. I think also the original offensive in northern Gaza, the way that the army was able to basically reach everywhere in northern Gaza within just a few weeks. It managed to completely dismantle the Hamas battalions in the area in a relatively short amount of time. I think that was regarded to be successful as well. Same with Khan Yunis, although it took much longer with Khan Yunis to dismantle the Hamas battalions there. And we know that as of this morning, all the IDF troops have been withdrawn from Khan Yunis like the army did with northern Gaza after it finished the operations there. Essentially, they don't have much else to do there, so they're going to withdraw them. It's just exposing them to additional risk if they keep them standing in the same place. So right now, there's only one IDF brigade in Gaza, the Nahal Brigade. It's sort of securing the Netzarim corridor, the route that crosses between across the Gaza Strip, which the army will also use to carry out operations in central and northern Gaza. And that's where we are right now. So I would say that all three of those are actually successes. The operation in North Gaza, including Shifa, the second Shifa operation, that is, the Khan Yunis operation, and also managing to secure this route. They've built an entire road across Gaza. It's also being used to deliver humanitarian aid in the Strip. Those have been the successes. But right now we're at a point where nothing new is really happening yet. There's still the Rafah operation, which is looming. There's still Hamas in central Gaza that the IDF has not reached yet. And it's unclear when those operations will be carried out.
So in terms of the battalion count, we started with Hamas having 24 battalions originally. How many are left and where are they now?
We're still at 18 Hamas battalions that have been dismantled by the IDF. That includes all of the ones that were in North Gaza and in Gaza City, 4 in Khan Yunis, and 2 in Central Gaza, which leaves us with 2 more in Central Gaza, the ones that are closer to the coast, not closer to the Israeli border, and 4 in Rafah, which have not yet been tackled. That has been the case for a couple months now already, and there hasn't been much change yet, apart from additional operations in Khan Yunis and the Shifa raid that we saw that lasted a couple of weeks.
Let's turn to the West Bank. And the West Bank has been very active over the past 6 months, but blessedly, there was no major upheaval. This morning, of course, a 19-year-old woman is seriously wounded and a man in his 50s is listed in good to moderate condition after a shooting attack on the West Bank's Route 55. And of course, this attack comes alongside a spate of shooting attacks throughout the war. But as I understand it right now, there are more troops deployed in the West Bank and potentially more operations in the West Bank than in Gaza. Is that correct?
As of now, there is around tenfold more troops in the West Bank than there are in Gaza. Like we mentioned, there's only one brigade in Gaza right now. That's the brigade and its 4 battalions in the West Bank. There's normally it's 13 battalions, but in the past few years, that has been increased to around 20, 25 at times as well. So really many more troops in the West Bank and many operations as well. According to the IDF, since October 7th, they've carried out 70 brigade level raids in the West Bank, targeting local terror operatives mostly in the northern West Bank, but also in Tulkarem, which is more toward the center. Around 420 Palestinian gunmen have been killed by IDF troops during these raids, and also those who carried out terror attacks and were killed during the terror attacks. The Palestinians, I believe, report around 450 people killed by the Israeli army in the past 6 months. That also includes some other incidents that are under investigation, including those that involved Israeli civilian settlers opening fire at Palestinians.
And we've noted several times along these past 6 months that some of the tactics in the West Bank have changed and there's been a shift to more drone usage.
Yeah, there has been a lot more airstrikes being carried out in the West Bank, the use of attack drones, not just for surveillance. And really, it looks like the operations in Gaza up until yesterday were looking a lot similar to how the West Bank operations were, where a small number of troops, usually a battalion or sometimes a brigade, would launch a raid into a certain neighborhood, following intelligence that where they know that terror operatives are located, arrest people if they need to arrest people, battle them if they need to, destroy explosives and weapons that they find. This is happening in both in Gaza and in the West Bank. Some tactics have been copied over from Gaza to the West Bank, and it seems that also vice versa as well.
Before we go to break, let's speak briefly about the Houthis and the Red Sea. So near the beginning of the war, the U.S. Central Command took out the big guns and deployed, I believe, two carrier strike groups, one in the Red Sea and one in the Mediterranean. So update me on what happened there and where are they now?
So the one that arrived in the Mediterranean, I believe, bounced after a couple of weeks or a month or so. But the one in the Red Sea, and there has been quite a large bolstering of American forces and other international navies in the Red Sea, mainly to prevent the Houthi attacks on the shipping routes. The U.S. launched a joint operation with its allies, and it has been attacking the Houthis in Yemen and preventing attacks on ships that are sailing through the area. The Houthis as well, we know that during the war, they've been launching missiles and drones at Israel from Yemen, most of which have not succeeded in reaching Israel. And that is largely thanks to the Americans intercepting some of them, also providing intelligence or information to Israel on incoming attacks. So the Americans can detect a missile being launched and the Israelis will have enough time to respond to it. That has mostly been sort of the coordination there. And that's where most of the American forces are right now in the Red Sea rather than in the Mediterranean itself. Although I do believe they have, you know, the American Navy is huge and they have forces basically everywhere.
Let's go to a short break and then continue our tour. And we're back. The IDF said it targeted sites belonging to Hezbollah's air defense unit in northeastern Lebanon's Baalbek overnight, and these targets included a compound and three additional infrastructures relating to Hezbollah's air defenses. At the same time, today we are hearing rocket alert sirens along the northern border, and this kind of tit-for-tat fighting has been going on since basically October 8th. So, Manny, let's hear a sense of the scope. What are the numbers you've heard from the IDF?
In terms of the numbers in Lebanon, according to the IDF, more than 330 terror operatives, mostly members of Hezbollah, have been killed in Lebanon. The number, according to the IDF, includes 30 Hezbollah commanders. According to the sort of information I've been able to track down, Hezbollah has named 271 members, and then there are 53 members of other terror groups. That includes Hamas and Islamic Jihad and the Amal movement, which is allied with Hezbollah, and a few other smaller groups as well. So that does reach around the same number. It includes also those killed in Syria, not just in Lebanon. The IDF also says it has targeted 4,700 Hezbollah positions in Lebanon. Not all of them by airstrikes. Many of them, I think even most of them, have been with tank fire and artillery shelling. Most of these sites, we're talking about Hezbollah positions that are close to the Israeli border. The IDF has been working to push Hezbollah back. So in those cases, they've been shelled with tanks. And like you mentioned, with the strike in Baalbek, which is much deeper in Lebanon, around 100 kilometers from the Israeli border, those obviously are carried out by fighter jets. Those strikes, which I believe are the fifth time Israel's targeted Baalbek amid the war, was in response to Hezbollah downing an Israeli drone over southern Lebanon yesterday. The drone was shot down by a Hezbollah surface-to-air missile, and in response, the IDF carried out strikes on sites belonging to Hezbollah's air defense unit, which are mostly situated in the Baalbek area.
Manny, do you have any sense how many forces are deployed to the northern border? We've talked about Gaza having one brigade. What's happening up north?
The last I heard from the army was that there are three divisions on the northern border. There's normally only one in that area on the Lebanon border, so they've been bolstered by two additional divisions. And that really just goes to show how many forces are there compared to Gaza. In Gaza, at the height of the ground offensive, there were four or five divisions operating simultaneously. Six in total have operated in Gaza. And normally the Gaza area only has one division, the Gaza division. And the northern border also only has one. And right now we're talking about three on the northern border. So there's a very heavy concentration of Israeli forces there, both to defend Israel from potential potential attacks by Hezbollah as they are ongoing, and also in case of an escalation in the violence, Israel may need to operate in Lebanon itself. Israeli officials have threatened this. If an agreement with Hezbollah does not actually happen, then the Israeli forces are readying their force for a potential action.
Now, you already mentioned Syria, but I'm putting Syria and Iran together for our tour because it appears to me that most of the strikes in Syria are on Iranian targets. And most recently, of course, Iran has threatened a response to the alleged assassination by Israel of its top Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps commander in Syria, along with five other IRGC officers, which we discussed last week. And while there have been no few strikes that international media at least assigns to Israel over the years, it appears to me that during these 6 months, Israel is more overtly taking credit. Would you agree with that?
Definitely think so. The latest strike in Damascus, which targeted the Iranian consulate adjacent to its embassy, Israeli officials basically took credit for the strike when speaking to the New York Times. To Israeli media, that was not said, and we are supposed to be saying that it's an alleged strike, although I don't think anyone has any doubts on this. An alleged Israeli strike, that is. There was another strike a couple weeks ago on the Iraqi-Syrian border, which Israel took credit for sort of officially. It was defense officials told reporters that Israel was behind the strike. And really, there are many cases like this, and the army doesn't hide that it carries out strikes in Syria. It just doesn't usually take responsibility for individual attacks. Although with some of these cases, it's a little bit hard to hide the fact that Israel was behind it. So even if they don't overtly take credit for it and say that they carried it out, it's pretty clear in a lot of these cases who carried out the strike.
Of course, Iran is threatening to respond, and Defense Minister Yoav Gallant says that Israel has, quote, completed preparations for a response against any scenario that would develop against Iran. What kind of scenarios do you think he's talking about?
Well, we've been told that Israel has assessed a few potential scenarios that could happen as part of Iran's response. There is obviously the assessment that Iran may try to carry out an attack abroad. We've seen reports that Israeli embassies abroad have heightened security to prevent a potential attack. We've seen in recent years Iran try to attack foreign embassies. So that's nothing new. Another assessment is that Iran will use its proxies in the Middle East, in Lebanon, in Syria, in Iraq, in Yemen, to carry out missile or drone attacks on Israel. That is also something we've seen amid the war repeatedly. The Houthis launching missiles and drones, Iran-backed militias in Iraq as well carrying out attacks recently hitting the Israeli Navy base in Eilat. Hezbollah obviously goes without saying they've launched thousands of projectiles at Israel amid the war. And then the last possible sort of scenario, which I can't tell you how likely or unlikely it is, would be an attack directly from Iran, a situation Israel has not yet faced. So that could potentially include missiles or drones being launched directly from Iran. Iran does have the capabilities to reach that far. We've seen them use missiles with that distance against other countries in the region. So it is believed that they can carry out such an attack. And that's just part of the assessment, depending on what the results are of such an attack, if there's damage, if Israel manages to prevent it, will also likely determine what sort of response Israel will carry out against Iran.
Let's talk about the lessons learned during mostly the Gaza operation. And I'm specifically curious about two major areas. One is humanitarian aid, and the other is the use of airstrikes versus targeted ground operations. So let's start with humanitarian aid.
So we've seen that the humanitarian aid situation in Gaza, delivering it, has not been too great, I would say. There's been lots of problems with getting the aid through and checking it. It's a whole convoluted process of checking it in Israel and sending it back to Egypt. So the IDF and the defense ministry, the KOGAT, which is under the defense ministry, have been working to open up new routes. The cabinet, I think, recently decided also to reopen the Erez crossing to enable more aid to enter through there as well. Obviously, we've now seen, after the deadly strike on the WCK aid workers, the IDF wrapped up its investigation into that. And then one of the lessons learned from that was to mark the aid vehicles with a sort of a sticker that will be visible to thermal cameras, because at night the drones are unable to sort of see things that are written on vehicles. They can only see heat signatures. So that's one of the lessons learned. I think that over the next few weeks, we'll see Israel working to open up more routes for aid into Gaza, trying to increase the amount of aid, reaching the strip per the demands by the international community, obviously, for there not to be a crisis in Gaza amid the IDF's operations.
Of course, the elephant in the room is Rafah, and I wonder how the IDF is going to deal with this, or even if, in the meantime, as I understand it, there are some airstrikes being carried out. And we saw before the ground operation into Gaza that there were a series of airstrikes to prepare the ground. There are a lot of people there in Rafah. How is the IDF going to deal with this tricky situation of preparing for the ground operation and using the airstrikes?
Airstrikes are constantly used in the war, have been forever, but there are some things that airstrikes can't do and can't reach. They're accurate, but they're not as accurate as a soldier being physically on the ground in front of the site that it needs to reach. There's also valuable intelligence that can be obtained on the ground by the troops. I mean, I'll give an example. I've been in Gaza several times, and I've always seen Hamas rocket launchers mostly intact, and next to it is a massive crater from an Israeli strike a few meters away. And sometimes, you know, the Israeli airstrikes are not accurate to the millimeter. They can be accurate by a few meters. And in those cases, you need soldiers on the ground to reach the rocket launcher, to blow it up physically. Sometimes it's just impossible when they're hidden under trees, or sometimes the underground launchers, which are not visible from the air, they're covered in a tarp or a layer of dirt, and then they just pull that off and then launch the rockets. The Air Force can't really handle those sort of things. You need to have troops on the ground to reach them. The tunnels as well. A lot of these tunnels are, the entrances are inside buildings, and without intelligence on them, there's no way to reach them. With regards to Rafah, I think the army will need to evacuate the civilian population from the area before it begins its offensive. Because of such a large number of civilians currently there, it will take a very long time to evacuate them and to find an adequate place for them to evacuate to. It is possible, I don't know for sure, I'm not involved in the discussions, that if they do launch an operation in Rafah, it will be sort of targeted to a limited area in the beginning. So they will call on a specific neighborhood to evacuate, operate there, then call on another neighborhood to evacuate, and then operate there. That's essentially how the Khan Yunis operation went down. It wasn't all at once like with northern Gaza. So it is possible that that's the sort of operation we'll see in Rafah as well.
In the meantime, there's one brigade in Gaza. How quickly could the army mobilize again if it needs to re-enter the strip for a large-scale operation?
probably not long. A day or two is the usual assessment for it to bring troops to the area. If we're talking about a massive, large-scale operation in Rafah, the army will likely need to call up reservists for that as well. Reservists were very involved in the initial ground offensive in North Gaza. So it wouldn't surprise me if the IDF, before it launches this operation, will call up reservists, give them a day or two to reach their unit, to get their supplies, to do a quick training, and then begin the operation.
But what does this lack of real manpower signal to you? The fact that there is one brigade, what does this mean to you?
It signals that the IDF has carried out its operations in Khan Yunis. It's sort of reached the limit of what it can do right now. And with no decision being made by the government giving a green light for an operation in Rafah or in the two remaining areas in central Gaza, the IDF hasn't got much to look for there. There's no reason for it to keep troops in Khan Yunis to basically be targets for Hamas. Then they don't have new intelligence. They're not looking for anything specific there, apart from the operation on Friday night to retrieve the body of the hostage Elad Katsir. That was, I would say, one specific case where they had some new mission to carry out. As of now, there are no new missions, and the government hasn't given the directive to operate in Rafah yet. So they should be withdrawing so that there's no threat to them. And if they need to carry out an operation, the IDF has its routes already built. It has the means to reach the areas it needs to reach. I don't think the IDF will have a particularly difficult time in reaching Rafah quickly if it needs to.
Manny, thank you so much for your insights and updates as we mark 6 months to the war.
Thank you, Amanda.
Thanks for listening to the Times of Israel's Daily Briefing. Please check out another installment tomorrow. This episode was produced by The Podwaves. If you have any questions or comments about this or any other episode, please drop us an email to podcast@timesofisrael.com. Until tomorrow, shalom.